Session number 26527, Reel 3.
Mr. Holness, Reel 3. We're talking about your time on board HMS Baisley, and we've done the sea trials, and the next thing would be your working up trials at Bermuda, I believe.
Bermuda, that's right.
Now, can you tell us about this, your time at Bermuda?
Yes, we set off for Bermuda, and on the way there, we had an emergency, or a mayday, I'll call you, I suppose you might call it, from the Argonaut. HMS Argonaut was in trouble. I can't remember what the trouble was, but we apparently people were under the nearest ships to it. So he was asked to go to render assistance. But on the way, unfortunately, the engine room caught fire, 5 o'clock one morning.
Your engine room?
And we couldn't continue, so we were sent back to Boston. And the reserve came another 3 weeks. So we had to leave again. But that's just in the... before we went to Bermuda, we left again, went back down to Bermuda then. We arrived there.
This would be late January or early February? Not sure.
No, the data in that book I have, but I can't remember them now.
So what happened when you arrived?
Well, there again, we didn't know what to expect. We were put on a 3 week training period of time. To all intents and purposes, we were at sea, even though we tied up alongside. Whatever we did had to be treated as being at sea. That was the working up trials.
What were you doing?
Well, it didn't involve the signal so much as the crews, because they had to. They were doing an exercise with guns, they went out for shoots, and we did abandoned ships.
Tell us about the abandoned ship. I know you've got a story about that. Tell us that.
Well, we went out into the bays for the abandoned ship practice, and where we released all the Carly rafts and anything else we had. And while out there, of course, you get jumped over the side when aboard your raft, and we used to paddle away far enough not to be able to hear to the callback. And that was the next job. They had to try and get us back to the ship, and it was lovely swimming out there, I'll tell you. So that was quite good experience for training, really, I think. There's also another occasion when the action station was given, well, the wardroom was holding a party of some sort, or reception on board, and this was somewhere about getting on towards midnight. Most of us had turned in, apart from the noise of the party, and they decided to hold for exercise action stations, and everybody moaned naturally about being turned out at that time of the night. But we did turn out, and various exercises were given on the ship. One of them was to abandon ship, the order was given, and everybody was rushing around trying to find something to do in the abandoned ship. What have we got to jump over, what to do, because we only had one side of the ship we could use. But then the order came, throw overboard anything that will float. And so the first thing that went over was the wardroom table. And it wasn't long after that they abandoned the exercise. So, anyway, good times out by all there.
Anything else about your time at Bermuda?
Also, we had an exercise. Oh, also in the same exercise, this one. They had loaded the guns with shells, and in cases they had to use live shells they put in there, but not fired them, of course. But somehow or other, they did fire one of the guns, and the shell landed just off St. George's, the next town in Bermuda. Naturally, the exercise came to a halt then, but the big inquiry, I've never heard the result of it, but I do know we left one rating deaf in hospital behind when we left Bermuda, and we never heard the outcome. Excuse me. One other thing that happened, we only had the one exercise alongside like this, one other thing that did happen was the commanding officer working up base was a visitor to this particular party, and he came aboard on his bike. because at that time there was only one vehicle on the islands, and there was the local naval lorry. And he came aboard on his bike, left his bike there. And one of the orders came through was to repel boarders and chase them off the jetty. So one of the ratings immediately called his bike and was going up the jetty shouting, chase them off the jetty, on the commander's bike. So he had to be brought back. And everybody's enjoyed it, I think.
Now, you're getting to know some of the men. Let's talk about some of them. I mean, some of them you would have known, some of them just by... Let's talk about some of the officers. What, starting with, not that they're more important, you know, just keep everything... What about Lieutenant Commander Brock, I presume? I don't know his first name.
Lieutenant Geoffrey Vanstone Brock, his name was.
Now, what was he like, as far as you were concerned?
He was a Canadian, RCNVR. Nobody knew anything about him. He never spoke to anybody. He was very independent, and I don't think he's actually met up with anybody, any of the crew on the ship. Only perhaps walked past them, never spoke, and kept to himself. But very efficient man, I should imagine. In fact, he had an uncle who was a captain of RCNVR. We had occasion to bring him back to England on the ship. And it was a family thing, really. They were all in the Navy.
Now, did this make him unpopular, the fact that he was a bit, you know, didn't speak a lot?
Well, it didn't, because we didn't know him. So, in a sense, I mean, he never told us anything that make us unpopular, you see.
But you thought he was competent?
Oh, yes, he was very efficient. There's no doubt about it.
Now, what about the First Lieutenant? Who was that?
First Lieutenant, the Honourable David Peter Seeley. Again... Very Royal Navy, by the way. He wasn't a
Now, what was he like then?
Now then, he's very, very efficient. More so than the captain, I think. He was strict, but fair. And he expected all his orders to be obeyed straight away, naturally, as a serving officer would. And I think he's probably one of the best officers I've ever known in the Navy in my time. And I think afterwards that he did a lot of good to all of us, that he made us into men where we started off as boys, because that's what we were. We were only 18-year-olds.
What about any other officers you remember? Any others that stand out?
Lieutenant Jefferson. They used to have different signal officers, but the main officer we had was Lieutenant Jefferson.
Now, what was he like?
Now, he was an Irishman. Came from Belfast. Again, very, very nice chap. Never raised his voice. He can ask you to do something, he'll tell you to do something, and you just do it willingly. He was a nice disposition about him.
And who was he? He was in charge of you signals.
Well, they all had various duties, obviously, but at that time he was a signal officer.
And he had the wireless operators as well, I presume.
Oh, yes, communications generally, yeah. And he was one of the best.
Did he know his stuff about signals or?
Well, they all knew a little bit and learnt more. This officers, let's say, specialised. They didn't know, you see. But by the way, go back to Geoffrey Vanstone Brock, the captain. He was a complete signals officer. He knew signals inside out, which I was to learn later on.
We'll come back to when the story comes. Yeah. What about any other officers that you remember their names or what they were like, rather?
Well, from then on downwards was the engineer. I can't remember his name offhand, but they were all nice people.
They were all good officers.
We never had any trouble with anybody. They were all nice. You did your job.
Now, what about you?
And they talked to you about anything if you wanted to speak to them about something.
Now, what about your signals, Yeoman? And
well, we didn't have a yeoman, which was entitled to, by the way, but I think they must have been short of them, because that's why that leading tower mentioned earlier was obviously drafted to us. As one was a leading signalman from the old Naval Reserve.
What was his name?
Radford.
Bradford?
R-A-D. George Radford.
And what was George Radford?
Now, he was a three-badge leading signalman. So it shows what time he'd done in the Navy. three bags of leading signal.
That's the exact opposite of you, in a sense, then. He'd been in it.
Yeah, but he more than semaphore, you couldn't fault him. No matter how fast it was and what it was, he really knew it.
What was he like with you?
All right. Well, he was one of the boys, really. We used to kid him out and joke with him, play cards with him.
So it was an informal thing.
It was, yeah, it was. And he was a great chap, actually.
Now, how about some of...
Older, of course.
Well, much up. Had he been in trouble? Because leading C was not very high for a three badge.
Well, he was on the reserve, you see, and I suppose at that time in the Navy, promotion was slow, wasn't it?
Now, what about the other lads, other signallers? Any of you remember in particular any of their names?
Well, one of them... Fred Hampson, the one who joined.
Fred Hampson. Now tell me what Fred Hampson was like. He was your particular pal, was he?
He was on the ship, yeah, because we joined up together. And he was a character. He was always had a story for everybody. No matter what you said, he had a story for it. Or could tell you a yarn. He was that type of person, and very popular with everybody.
Good signal?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got on well together, the two of us, and we used to go everywhere together and do everything together.
He was your oppo, your special pal?
On the ship, yeah. Well, that time, because he got drafted later, but...
Any other you particularly...
The other one, neither of us liked much. He was a sourpuss, I'll put it that way.
What was it you didn't like? I mean, what do you mean by sourpuss?
He was actually a grade above us. Well, he was only ordinary signalman in those days. And he was a signalman, this other one, but...
An able signalman, or whatever it is.
He was one of these who complained about everything, and never got a smile or anything. He just didn't want to know. You know. It was terrible. But he wasn't our type. So anyway, he was the other one. And...
Any more?
No, I was just going to come back to the fact that when they left, if I may, because...
Yeah?
But as soon as we boarded the ship, we'd been advised about this earlier, put in for advancement to your next grade, because whenever you get it, it'd be backdated. So we'd already put it in, and of course, the next time we could have a chance to get it next grade was Bermuda. We hadn't reached it yet, and so the time was melted out. But after that, see, we all became signalmen, you see.
So did you have the equivalent of able seamen, only able signalmen?
Yeah, signalmen was all like ordinary seamen.
Yeah.
Then you got signalman, which same as AB. Then you got signalman trained operator coming up to leading hand.
And you were promoted to...
I'd rather tell you that one in a minute.
Okay,
But, this actually didn't happen until we got back to Belfast, what I'm going to say now, but...
Oh, no, okay, we'll save it. So what happened, anything else happened at Bermuda? You get ashore?
Oh, yes, we used to, just visiting. We didn't walk around and... at that time, of course, the coloured folk had their own toilets and things like that. There was no them and us. Well, it was them and us, wasn't it? Black people and whites. But as I said before, there's no buses or cars on the islands. There's only the one Navy lorry. And there was train service between all the islands. And the one particular time we made... use of it was when we went to St George's, all of us, from where we were in Malabar, and we went by ferry from there to St George's, the Navy ferry. But when we come to go back about midnight, or had to be back aboard by midnight, the weather was so bad we couldn't get back. Of course, in that case, we were all adrift. But very fortunately, Lieutenant Commander Brock was also adrift. He was with us. So the last train, when he arrived, had just gone. It was a train service, but we didn't know how to use it, you see. And then he said, we'll have to do something about that. He said, can we catch it? He didn't say it to us, of course, but this is the idea, could we catch it? And he commandeered somebody's bicycle, because loads of bikes there, and it chased after this train and brought it back. She brought it back to the dock. And we all abided by that, and a couple of hours drift, all of us, but nothing was done about it. Yeah, actually chased a train with a bicycle and caught it, because it was ever slow moving, like a tram between the islands, really.
And what did you think of St George's when you were there?
It was a top-notch place, wasn't it? It was the place of Bermuda, wasn't it? But all we remember about it was that they had walrus and those sort of places, and they had things we hadn't seen for years. You know, that's what we remember mainly about it.
So what happened when you finished at Bermuda?
Well, when we finished Bermuda, we were detailed to go to Williamsburg in Virginia to collect something to bring back to England, which turned out to be some mines or some of your equipment of some sort they wanted back in England. So anyway, off we went and loaded up in Williamsburg, which was the, still flies the British flag, by the way. I don't know if you know that. It's the where the last resistance or something to do with the English settlers held out. But anyway, they made us most welcome there, which is just north of Norfolk, the Navy Yard. We had a couple of days there loading up. But on the, we had some engine trouble or something on the way back after that. We were due to go back to England. And we had so much trouble, we had to go back to Boston again, which was terrible. Met up with all our old friends again in Boston for another couple of weeks. And while there, they had the ship wardroom altered and things like that, and various things done. And the Baisley had the only wardroom of its type in the captain class frigates. They'd had it, so certain partitions pulled down and other bits done. They had the biggest wardroom and the best in the fleet. They looked after themselves there, the officers. But it was nice.
And then what about the crossing of the Atlantic?
Crossing the Atlantic, well, when we came back, we came back as an escort with the HMS Queen Elizabeth. We escorted her.
HMS?
HMS.
The battleship?
Battleship, yeah. And the Oraibi destroyer, as they are, remember. I think it's about all there was. There might have been other. It was only captain class, anyway. Came back.
What was it like?
And it was all right. It's a first introduction, really, to a long sea voyage on a small ship.
Now's perhaps the time to ask how you found the Baisley as a whether it rolled or not.
Well, it did. It was a terrific roll on them, all the frigates, captain class.
That's what I wanted to ask you. What did you think of it, and how did it affect you?
Well, we'd already previously had a very big roll, one of the biggest ever recorded in the Navy, I think, when we was on the trip back to Boston. We got caught in a typhoon or something. Some terrific wind, I forget what it was, but we were by ourselves, an electrical storm, typhoon, we had the lot, and it was one of the biggest rolls I think they've ever... But I've never had it again. It was just one off. But
what was it like when it was rolling badly?
Well, I think we just accepted it. It's funny, you think you might be scared of something like that, perhaps, but at the time you don't think of it.
Did it make you seasick? I mean, did you get seasick yourself?
I've been seasick a couple of times, but not as bad as most of them. Some of the crew later on were actually discharged from the ship because they couldn't stand small ships. But with seasickness, even if you are going to be seasick, it's only probably for the first time out, first day. And once you're over that, don't matter what the weather's like, or you never get it, never feel it again.
You wouldn't get it first day out every time you went out?
No,
just the first time?
It just depends what you've been eating, I suppose, or something, I don't know. But if you were seasick, it didn't last long. And after you was over it, no matter what the trip was like for 9 weeks or whatever, you'd never be seasick again on that trip.
Now, what about your duties as a signal? Let's talk about that, because we haven't done it yet. And this is your first long sea voyage, so we might as well, you know.
Well,
what was a daily routine for you as a signaller? I mean...
Well, we worked in... the watchkeeping system, but in our own branch, because we were separate from everybody else on the ship. We had to do at least one signalman on all the time, naturally. If anything happened, you always call on the others, but the yeoman appeared when he wanted. We called him yeoman, even though he was leading hand.
So what was the watch system for signalers? If you just explain
The normal watch system is the same as everybody else normally, but we didn't work that. We worked what they call West Country watches, which was slightly different to the... routine.
Do you mean the whole ship worked them, or just the signals?
No, we were allowed to work our own watches. This confused a lot of them, actually, what we did.
Tell us what the signaller's watch system was.
West Country watches, it's called.
Now, what does that mean?
West Country watch system. Well, when you did an afternoon watch, your next watch wouldn't be Miss Toon first watch. You get the last dog with it, so you've one between it. And that way, you got all night in your bunk. Because you didn't go on again until 8 o'clock next morning. And the other way it worked is if you did the middle watch, when you finished your middle watch, you didn't go on again till the afternoon watch. I've got it wrong. I've got that wrong.
What was it?
No, you went on to the morning watch, and then from the morning watch, which is like 4 to 8, you went on the afternoon watch. Instead of missing two, you only miss one. And that way you've got a long gap again. You see, even though you was available during the normal hours, so every forenoon everybody would be available anyway. There was, nobody could turn in or do anything. You did all your work then. And so you just got to be on watch. And that gave the chap who'd be on the middle watch the afternoon off, which you normally wouldn't get on the normal routine, you see. It's a simple system, really, but it was a...
It worked.
It worked.
Now, what were your duties? What, when you were on watch, what did you do? Where did you do it? You'd be on the bridge, I suppose. But
you were on the bridge with the officers. You were a general lookout as well as anything else. If a light started flashing, everybody shouted, "Light flashing!" We'd already seen it, of course. We're standing there looking at it. They say, "Aren't you going to answer it?" No, not for us. So, you know, you get a lot of that. Then yeah, they got to know us as well as we got to know them.
So did anything happen while you were with the Queen Elizabeth on the convoy, not convoy, escort duty?
Yes, this was the first trip, or the one trip, where we realised that the Commander Brock, or Lieutenant Commander Brock, knew signals. Because it was middle of the night, and I was on watch, and remembering this was my first trip in the Navy as a signalman, being left alone, really. And he said, "There's a light flashing over there." He'd just go up on the bridge to have a look round. And he said, "There's a light flashing over there, and I couldn't even see the light." And he said, "It's coming from board to the Queen Elizabeth." He said, "Answer it." I said, "I'll answer it, sir, but I can't see it." He said, "Answer it." So I got the blue night light out, answered it. And he read the signal, Commander Brock. And all he said to me afterwards was, "Now you know what to expect in the future." And that's the last I heard of it.
You just couldn't see the light?
I said he never spoke to anybody. That's the only time I ever spoke to him. And I couldn't even see it. He said, "Now you know what to expect for the future," he said. He never gave me telling off or anything.
Now, where did you pull into on that? Where were you going to?
We came back to Falmouth, the first port. I don't know why we went there, to be honest with you. We went there, and I don't know the reason, because from there, almost immediately, we went up to Belfast.
Now, that was where you were going to be based, wasn't it?
Belfast base.
Is that where you joined the 4th Escort Group?
That's where the 1st Escort Group, 4th Escort Group was formed, yeah. And that was the Bentinck, Baisley and Berry. No, Blackwood. Blackwood. Bentley, Blackwood and Baisley.
And how did you settle down within them? Did you do training exercise with them before you went to sea in the first convoy?
None at all. It was just accepted that the group would be able to do it. We didn't exercise as a group at all. Never did.
So, tell me what were you doing first? What was your first job with them? Would it be convoy work?
Yes, the first job was a convoy. Went up to Greenock to join a convoy there. It's all new to me as well, don't forget. And it was to Halifax. No, it wasn't. A big part of it. It was to St John's, Newfoundland. That was the route, as far as we know, it was going to. And that was the one where it was a major action. My first introduction to the Navy was a major action, where there was 5 U-boats sunk, one by the Calder, no, Byard. The Byard sunk one, it shot a plane down there, sunk a submarine, gunfire, brought it to the surface.
Now tell us what happened.
We couldn't see it.
Your major action, I mean, what happened to you?
We've detailed on the end of it. Well, we was all around all the time, but the first action we joined in was towards the end of the action of the others. We picked up these contacts, Drury and Baisley. And I'm not sure if we sank when then that time or not. I really can't remember that. But that was the first time we've ever dropped depth charges in anger. And quite frightening, really, at that time, I thought, because you knew there was something there.
What was it like when you dropped depth charges? Because they're quite frail, weren't they?
They were.
The ships, not the depth charges.
Well, they shook a bit. They did shake a bit, I must admit. But I don't think we were actually frightened. We just didn't know what to expect. First time out like that.
Now, perhaps now while we're on a convoy, tell us what exactly your signal duties were. You know.
Well, most of the signals went through to the senior officer of the convoy, which was Bentinck. Senior officer of the group, which was Bentinck. And he issued the orders of positions for the escort, what zigzags to undertake, keep your eye on certain ships. Generally, there was quiet. Once all the orders have been given for the day, you're just on little routine bits.
Now, this is flag signals, is it?
No flag. All flashing. We did have RT, by the way, but they didn't use it. Only emergency.
Now, why didn't they use it?
Well, in case of the submarines listening. Very seldom used it. Nearly all done by light. You've got routine signals every day, which was zigzags to undertake in front of the convoy. Go back and see if somebody's all right, perhaps. Or I lost it.
It's all right. Any other routine signals?
Yeah, Commodore's observed noon position used to come through every day. I remember that. One particular funny one about that was in the Navy, these officers always got little bits from the Bible which they quote. And it's only a little one, but the Commodore had taken the position of the convoy and it was foggy. And the positions they give are always observed. So the signal came out with his observed noon position. And as Skipper said, well, how could he take that? He said, make back to him that... how did he observe that in the fog? And the answer came back is just, who can tell the ways of a man with a maid or the ways of a commodore with a heavenly body? And that's one of the quotes. So they have got all sorts of quotes they use over the period of time, but that's one I particularly remembered. Yeah. We pushed on after that. We were under attack for 2 or 3 days, I believe, if I remember rightly.
But you didn't see... evidence of it, you were on duty.
That's right. But don't forget, the convoy spread out miles and miles, about 20 miles.
What was convoy discipline like for the merchant ship?
Very good. Of course, the speed of the convoy was the speed of the slowest ship, naturally. But they were very good at keeping station. And of course, don't forget, that they didn't have radar. Of course, radar had only just been introduced, and we were some of the first ships to have it. So we were fortunate there. But we never had any trouble with convoy work. They all seemed to maintain station.
Did you get nervous? I mean, how did you feel in yourself?
No, never thought about it. We all accept. I've never found anybody was nervous. You just accepted it. It was a thing you had to do, and that was it. Yeah, surprising.